You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Welcome to MLB.com Extras, the San Diego Padres. Hello, everyone. I'm Allison Footer from MLB.com, here for a long-time chat with Corey Brock, who covers the Padres for MLB.com. Corey, we have not talked in a very long time, and I hope that you are enjoying your offseason. But, of course, when it comes to the Padres, there's never a dull moment. And so let's talk about the Kimbrel trade. Pretty surprising. I don't know if it came out of nowhere for you, but the man has been on the move, obviously, a lot in the last year. So what was your reaction when you heard about this trade?
Yeah, you know, Allison, I wasn't so much surprised that he was traded. I guess it was just maybe the timing of it, and certainly the haul of prospects that the Padres received from the Red Sox was certainly a little surprising. But, you know, the way I look at this, you know, as the regular season was ending, was, you know, they needed to make some upgrades. That was obvious. The team underperformed, underachieved, whatever you want to call it, 74 wins last year. So if they were going to make some changes, they were going to have to do it a little bit differently than they did it last year. And certainly we all know the route A.J. Preller went last year was trading a lot of prospects to get a lot of major league-ready pieces to help this team. Matt Kemp, Justin Upton, Craig Kimbrel the day before opening day. Just a bevy of moves that were made, but was able to use some inventory that they had internally. Now, with those pieces gone, and Alex, I've been using the term raided the farm system because it was it wasn't picked clean, certainly, but most, you know, a lot of good pieces were gone. But they were going to have to deal from the major league roster if they were going to make upgrades. So, of course, they traded Joaquin Benoit last Thursday, and then on Friday made the big Craig Kimbrel deal. So end up moving a couple relievers to help them sort of restock that farm system and also give them some financial flexibility in terms of free agents.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the main point. And I think that you and I probably talked about this a lot last year after they had made all of those moves. Just the fact that where is their farm system? Where does that leave their farm system? And, you know, they can gloss over things or look at the bright side until, you know, the sun comes up. But when it comes down to it, I mean, we know how vital these minor league systems are for the health of an organization, and there's absolutely no way that you can look at what they did a year ago and say, oh, yeah, they're fine. I mean, it's not like they had the strongest farm system in baseball at the time when they were even doing all of this. So the fact that they got like four minor league players back, or I'm sorry, six, including the Benoit trade, in just a matter of, you know, a couple of weeks, I mean, that speaks, I think, hugely to really where they are, more than I guess, needing to free up money in free agency.
Well, and because you're absolutely right, and because it serves sort of two purposes, Allison. Yeah, I mean, not only do you restock this farm system with players who could someday, at least in their eyes, hopefully help them at the big league level, but you've added some assets. And, you know, let's face it, maybe A.J. Preller turns around and moves half these guys in deals later this offseason. So it accomplishes a lot of things. It clears payroll. It restocks the system, and it gives you some attractive pieces that might be viewed as nice fits for other organizations that they could spin off and turn into pieces that will help them in 2016.
So let's we don't need to dissect every player here, but looking at these prospects, the big one appears to be the outfielder, and I forgot to ask you how to pronounce his last name before we started taping. So Manuel Margot, is that how you say his last name?
Yeah, until he tells me otherwise, that's what I'm going with.
Okay, so that appears to be the centerpiece of this trade, like a number three prospect in the system, an outfielder. So what do we know about him?
Yeah, kind of a dynamic young player who split last season between high A and double A. And, it certainly has a live bat. He has some speed, and he's a very good defensive center fielder, which, you know, at Petco Park with a big outfield and, you know, several big outfields in the National League West can be very helpful. And, you know, there's a thought that maybe he's only a year away from reaching the big leagues. And it's funny, you know, I talked to one of the other guys in the deal, Carlos Suárez, I hope I'm pronouncing that right.
Asfaye. I was going to ask you how to say his name. Beautiful.
Yeah, that's got a little something to it. But, you know, he's playing in the Arizona Fall League. And, you know, I asked him, I was like, well, tell me about Manuel Margot. And he said, he told me he was one of the most electric players that he's ever played with. And, you know, he thinks the guy's going to be a real superstar. So, and plus he's got really plus makeup, apparently. He said just guys gravitate toward him. So, young guy who I think is going to be, could be a big impact player at the big league level. And the other guy, of course, that they're very excited about is the shortstop, Javier Guerra. He's only 20. He's probably a couple years away. But, I think most of the industry, Allison, was generally in consensus that, you know, they thought that the Padres really got a good package for Kimbrel. And especially for a guy, if you think about it, a 60-inning pitcher, and you're able to get four prospects, and who knows what becomes of them. But I think it was a pretty good move and pretty good move for the future for the Padres.
So if you were talking to a room full of, let's say, 150 Padres fans, what would say? Yeah, so put yourself in a room with 150 Padres fans who would like to know in which direction they're headed. Like if you had to look at 2016, and of course it's very early in the offseason, so they can make a lot more moves, but what would you tell them? I mean, as far as what place are they in right now? Where do they fit in the division? Do you think that they will improve on last year? I guess it's kind of hard to tell.
Well, it is, just because, you know, probably the timeliness of that conversation when it would take place. I mean, certainly to a segment of the fan base, they're going to look at these two deals that have been made, moving Benoit, moving Kimbrel, and, getting prospects in return. They're going to assume it's some sort of rebuilding, some sort of not fire sale, certainly, but just a step back, maybe take a step forward. And I don't quite see it that way, only because, you know, we don't have a whole lot of history with A.J. Preller, but the history we do have shows that this guy has a proclivity for being very active and being very creative in terms of trades. And as we sit here in the middle of November, I think it's a little bit too early to pass any kind of judgment on what the rest of this offseason is going to hold or what the 2016 roster may look like. I'm just looking at it, given his past, the small sample size here, that he's made a couple moves now to move a few relievers that they could probably live without. You could probably fill that internally, and maybe you go out and get a reliever. You've helped the farm system, you've gained some assets, and you've created financial flexibility to maybe do a little bit more on the free agent market than you could have done a week ago today. So I would say it's kind of a wait-and-see approach, and I would reschedule that meeting, that town hall with the Padres fans for maybe the middle of January instead of the middle of November.
Yeah, I guess if there's one thing that you can look at kind of as a positive is that even if the moves that they made last year, he was the rock star GM, I mean, it didn't quite work out the way they had planned, but clearly the intention is to win. And I know that sounds funny because most people would think like every team has this intention to win. But there's a lot of teams that have an intention to win eventually. And they really were all in on trying to get this thing going right now. So I guess that would be a positive from a Padres fan standpoint, that they're looking to be competitive right now and not trying to build something for 5 years from now.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, if you're going to look at this again from the outside looking in, and you're wondering which direction they go, well, yeah, the team will eventually tell you which direction they're going based on their action or their inactivity. And, you know, now let's flip the prism a little bit, Allison, and say, okay, well, if they somehow, this is a pure hypothetical here, and then your most attractive trade piece that you have is Tyson Ross, a guy that's, you're not going to reach free agency for a couple more years, a very, very good pitcher. I think he's very underrated still. Let's say you package a Matt Kemp with a Tyson Ross to get out from under Matt Kemp's contract, and maybe, you have to attach him to Ross, sort of like what the Braves did with attaching Melvin Upton to Craig Kimbrel a little bit. Like, hey, you really want this closer, you need to take Melvin Upton. So, hey, you really want Tyson Ross, you need to take Matt Kemp. Now, if the team does that, Allison, then I think it signals a little bit different direction. Then I think that truly means they are taking a step back with plans on, refilling the farm system to take a step forward. Because what you've done is you've weakened yourself at the major league level. And I still don't think they want to break up this core of guys yet.
Okay, one last thought. Ian Kennedy rejected the qualifying offer, and I think that took a lot of people maybe by surprise. Can you just decipher this for those of us that might not be, like, following every single tidbit and nook and cranny of what these qualifying offers mean and why this might have been a surprise for some people? It might have been risky for Ian to do that.
Yeah, and probably risky for the Padres to offer it, too, to some extent, because, had he accepted, he would have been under contract for 1 year for about $15.8 million. But, you know, the Padres had a pretty good idea that he was going to decline. He's a Scott Boras client, and Scott doesn't really believe, you know, he's an anti-qualifying offer. And I think Ian Kennedy will get paid. But I know some people will just kind of look at the ERA and maybe the record and say, well, geez, what was he thinking? Why did he turn this down? And, you know, again, I still think he's going to get paid. These teams still show that they're willing to deal out a lot of dollars on multi-year deals for players. And this guy, you know, he's a durable pitcher. He had a really good 15-start stretch right in the middle of the season, had a DL stint early on. But, you know, there's a history of durability there. The strikeout per nine innings is up. I still think this is a good pitcher. He's just turning 31 next month. He's going to get paid. All these guys end up getting paid, Allison. And, you know, the Padres, while, yes, they would have been fine with him coming back, they're very excited that, you know, now if he signs with another team or when he signs with another team, they'll recoup draft pick compensation, which ends up being a pretty good pick. And the way this sort of sets up for the Padres now, they're probably going to have about five picks before the third round next year. And there's no better way, as we know, to fill that farm system than with drafting and developing players.
Yeah, and I think that's part of why maybe there was some surprise that he did reject it. Just because there's that possibility that teams would not want to give up a draft pick to sign Ian Kennedy. I think that's where maybe some of the surprise came from, that there's a chance that he could be jobless on opening day because of that. I mean, that's happened to players before where they're, like, sitting around. And it's not because they don't have anything to bring to the table. They are very valuable, but they're not quite worth the risk for a team to lose a draft pick. So that could play into this.
Yeah, it's not an easy decision on either side, really. With Justin Upton, that was a no-brainer. I mean, he was never going to re-sign here.
Right.
You offer him qualifying offer, he turns it down, and you gladly collect your draft pick. But with Kennedy, sure, there's a risk on each side. And ultimately, Allison, he's gambling on himself. And he's betting on himself, I should say. And he's betting that the market will still yield a multi-year deal for a pitcher of his credentials. Mostly because it continues to do so. We've seen few and far cases where guys are sitting around looking for a job on opening day. It does happen. You're right. But if someone's going to pay Ian Kennedy, I'm really curious to see what he ends up getting, but he's going to get his payday.
Okay. Good stuff. Thanks, Corey. Catch up with you soon.
Yeah, sounds good. Thanks, Allison.
MLB.tv Premium, the number one live streaming sports service, is celebrating 13 years. Watch every out-of-market regular season game live or on demand in true HD. Real-time highlights, live look-ins, pitch tracking widget, and more. MLB.tv Premium includes a free At-Bat 15 subscription. Watch live baseball on over 400 mobile and connected devices. Watch at home, in the office, or on the go. Every night, on every device. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Visit MLB.tv for details.